York City. It's the Gary Knoll Show.
This will be an everlasting love. This will be the one I've waited for. This will be the first time anyone has loved me.
And now, your host, so Gary Knoll.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Today, from the University of Sydney, which is in Australia, how intermittent fasting changes liver enzymes and helps prevent diseases. Well, that's good news, because if we want to live a longer life, we have to have a healthier liver, which processes all the nutrients going in to make them metabolically available for the cells to use, and takes all those drugs that people take and toxicants and takes and conjugates them and takes them out of the body through the liver. It also means that if we're wanting to lessen our risk of cancer, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes, then all diseases to lower the risk, that optimum intervals for fasting. Good. Because just in a week from now, another group of people are joining me for 90 days, 60 on campus and the rest at home, and intermittent fasting every single day, meaning 9 o'clock in the morning, you have your nourishment for the start of the day, but, and then the evening, your last meal should be around 5 or 6 o'clock, but then you fast the next 12 hours, and that's good. And then on the weekends, you're not taking solid food, but you're taking liquids, so you're getting all the nutrition you need. It's just breaking the habit of feeling we have to have food constantly available and in us. People finish a dinner and then an hour later they're standing with the refrigerator door open looking for something to eat again, and the stomach is still full. So we can live a longer life if we pay attention. We're going to talk about that and several other issues. Also, interesting enough, we wrote an article about how to, in effect, help our immune system become stronger. And this is especially true for older people who are more susceptible to the coronavirus, but all viruses. Mind you, before the coronavirus was killing people, the flu virus was killing tens of thousands of people. And it's only based upon PubMed, the government's official website for peer review quality scientific studies. Only that was used for, let's say, echinacea, colloidal silver, astragalus, and other herbs and botanicals and nutrients like vitamin C and vitamin D. Well, guess who's reading it? People throughout Russia, Germany, England, and guess where it got blocked? Google in the United States. What a pathetic group of people who work for Google, run Google, and even trust Google. But fortunately, a lot of other sites, and ironic, a lot of religious sites picked up the article because they want their congregants to be healthier. So you see, even when we try to get information out that can help people, and then, of course, Whole Foods, why would we expect anything from Jeff Bozo, who owns that clownish operation, to do the right thing? So he's saying, don't trust anything, and the government's saying, don't trust anything, it's natural. Why not? Your own literature has thousands, tens of thousands of studies showing it has antiviral, antibacterial, and immune-enhancing qualities. Could it have anything to do with the medications that you want people to take, the monopoly, the lack of freedom of choice? Well, we're going to talk about that today. Also today, we're going to hear from Roger Waters in a short rally in London in support of Julian Assange. And it was Tucker Carlson, the only person in the media who had the courage to bring him on and let him talk and say what he had to say. It's a good piece. On this issue, I agree with Tucker. On other issues, I have a difference of opinion, but at least he's taking on some issues others are not. Then we're going to hear from citizens in San Francisco at a hearing about why they've done nothing, absolutely nothing, to inform the public about the dangers of 4G, 3G, 2G, 1G, and especially 5G. But people were there to talk about small cells, these tower cells, leading to a fast brain tumor. I think you'll find that interesting. And time permitting today, a Charmanian Gooch is at a TED Talk talking about the global corruption's hidden players. So you get to see who's behind the people who are the corrupt ones out in front. There's a whole lot of people behind the scenes. A lot. So we're just going to show you how corruption works worldwide. That's our show. And by the way, just a little aside, normally I post 3 times a day new articles and photos and videos up on my Facebook. But my Facebook for the last 24 hours has been locked, they said, because of multiple passwords, meaning other people having a password and then going on there and posting stuff they shouldn't post. I normally catch people who are posting stuff on there, sneaking in, and in the morning when I get up, I delete all that stuff. Anyhow, we may not have the ability to go up on Facebook for a couple days. So whenever they open it up again or don't, we're finding another backup site. So we'll, you know, in my opinion, I told my staff today, IT people, we don't need Facebook. Let's, you know, let's find another platform. So we're seeking that. And so that, just want to let you know, because if you wonder why there's nothing new, that's the reason why. So we begin today with the fasting article, but I gave you the highlights of it. And what a Dr. Mark Lawrence at the University of Sydney identified was fasting affects proteins in the liver, showing unexpected impact on fatty acid metabolism and the surprising role played by a master regulator protein that controls many biological pathways in the liver and other organs. So when you intermittently fast, you're helping the liver, you're helping the liver enzymes, you're helping the body re-regulate itself, creating more homeostasis. And that means the liver then can be more self-regulating to cleanse, detoxify, and metabolize. So, and this was published in the peer-reviewed journal of Cell Reports. The Third Military Medical School in China published an article on how vitamin B1, thiamine, is really important for bone health. According to news reporting, they said that the B complex, especially B1, are coenzymes participating in energy metabolic pathways and affecting bone homeostasis, the effect of B1, thiamine on bone health. So just make sure you're getting your B complex each day. You don't have to have a lot. Let's say 25 milligrams B1, B2, and B6, 500 to 1,000 micrograms of B12, a 500 to 1,000 micrograms, that's MCG, not milligrams, micrograms, of folic acid. Those are your most important ones. From the National Institutes of Health in Finland comes a study about how stress and lifestyle can predict how long we live. Now, there are many reasons, and we've gone over them on this program, and I went over them. I had a 7-hour webinar, on how to live a longer life. And in there, we had actual studies showing that, for example, if you work night shift, you're going to take years off your life. And I won't go through how many years, but right now, but if you drank even moderate alcohol, if you smoked, how much and how long, if you ate sugar, if you had a processed diet like the average American diet, if you were under stress, and then on the positive side, if you exercised, if you weren't sedentary, if you took proper supplements, if you had a healthy plant-based diet, all the things you can do to add years onto your life. And then by taking the mean average level and then taking away the years that you are doing things wrong and then adding on the years that you're doing something right, you can get an approximation. Now, of course, you can impact that dramatically, and that's the whole purpose of our study. Can we repair damage to our DNA? If there's breakages in the DNA, at the age of 70, can we stimulate the healing process that we had at 20? And the answer is yes, we've proven it. Now we're doing the confirmatory study. But the same is also true. What if we're trying to be healthy in some ways, but we stay chronically stressed? Now, this is a big deal because I'm faced with this virtually every day. Ivan was speaking last night, counseling someone, and the person was given every single thing they needed if they chose to be healthy. But then when I asked him, how many of the things that I gave you did you use, there was a silence. And I said, well, what did you do and what didn't you do? Now, when the person did everything, enormous changes occurred. I mean, changes that you won't find in medical textbooks capable of reversing. But then when the person got comfortable because they no longer had their underlying condition, they went back to, you know, having social drinking and not taking their supplements and not exercising on a regular basis. In other words, they went back to the old way, and then things started to deteriorate again. And what was the one thing that this person said? Well, stress. Always stress. Why stress? Why do you feel stressed about everything? And it's not just one thing that stresses, it's everything. And you've got these people who everything stresses them, especially any change and especially anything they can't micromanage and control. More often than not, these would be alpha male and females, people who don't want anyone messing with their life, have total control over their life, and try to have control over every environment and everyone else in their life. And these are people that have a rough time staying healthy because they have a rough time looking at life in a position of surrender. Everything is conquer. Winning, beating, being number one, no matter what it takes. In the process of doing that, though, you lose balance in your life. When was the last time you had a hobby? When was the last time you went to a library? When was the last time you went to a museum and without rushing, just to enjoy what was there? When was the last time you went to an art film? When was the last time you went out with friends just to enjoy yourself? But the theme of the evening is don't use my time and energy to complain. I'm not your therapist. Let's just enjoy each other in the moment we have and going forward. Now, and then the answer was none of the above. Okay, so you're successful at what you do, and now you're stressed. Why? Because underlining all that alpha, go get it, more often than not, there's an insecure person trying to prove themselves, overcompensating. In the process of overcompensating, they lose the capacity for empathy, to understand what it is to be a person who is not going to go out there and try to change the world, but try to live in some harmony with it. And these people just see these people as weak instead of not aggressive. Big difference on the spectrum, how you see someone is how you're going to treat them. And they only pay attention to the famous ones. Isn't it interesting? We hear all front page, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, his wife, have the coronavirus. So? So what? Don't tell me about Tom Hanks because it insults me. Don't tell me about his wife and down in Australia working on a movie and they have the coronavirus and everybody's concerned. That is the height of conceit. Because you didn't tell me about all the other people in all the other countries, the 60 million people shut in Italy, the thousands who have been diagnosed and the over 1,000 who've died there. Those are also sacred human beings, are they not? Shouldn't all the victims be seen in a way that shows respect for what they're going through? But that's not the way it works in our world. That's what happens when you start taking your success seriously, or other people who are deferred to because of their success in some field seriously. And that's what happens with alpha men and women. That's why I stay away as much as I can from successful people helping them, because I help 3,000 very famous and successful people, and they are the worst people in the world to stick to a protocol, because in the rest of their life, they don't have to do a damn thing. If they want a loaf of bread, they got an assistant going to get it. Their kid has to have a diaper change. They got 16 nannies that come running to do it. Of course, they're going to run the National Choir and drop a story on them. And these are the entitled people. My God, do we have an epidemic of entitled people right now in the United States. Your professional class are the worst. They're the worst parents as a group. You can certainly find some exceptions. And the celebrities, oh, you don't want to be around them. There are exceptions. You know, there are conscientious people, but the majority, just some very insecure souls trying to prove that somehow they deserve that red carpet treatment everywhere in life. I never will forget, I was filming out in L.A. No, it was the weekend I was doing the marathon, L.A. Marathon. And I went down to Venice Beach, which is a hoot. If you've never been to Venice Beach, you got to go. Because, I mean, every exhibitionist in the world's down in Venice Beach. It's a freak show. And I remember this guy come along, had long white hair, tied in a bun in the back, and off the bun was a ponytail. He must not have cut his hair in 30 years. I'm guessing he was about 70. And he was rollerblading, and he had just this little string up his rear end, you know, and one of those G-strings. And I'm thinking, man, that's something you can't forget. Not a good thing to look at. In any case, I went into this store there because they had some vegan ice cream and regular ice cream. And there's a line, fine, so we're all waiting in line, as respectful people do. And suddenly, in comes a celebrity with her daughter, walks up to the counter, and suddenly the help went from helping her, the people, to this celebrity. Nobody said anything. So I got out of line, I'm walking up, and I looked at her, and I said, excuse me, I said, what right do you have, or assume you have, to be in front of us? And, you know, the person behind the counter, do you know who she's? I know who she is. I've seen her movies. You know, I appreciate your acting, but you're getting big bucks for that. And right here, you're not acting, and there's no reason anybody should defer to you. And you, in fact, should show some humility and get in line like the rest of us. Or would it be too much of a hit on your ego to know that you actually had to stand in line with common people to wait your turn? Well, she didn't answer. She just looked back, and the guy gave her ice cream. She split, didn't even pay for it. Oh, I forgot. Celebrities don't expect to pay for anything. That's how dark our society is at this moment. That's also identity politics. If you're famous, you can get away with things until you can't. So in any case, when it comes to life expectancy, a lot of people are not going to live long lives because they don't believe that they should spend the time and discipline, insight and wisdom necessary to understand the quantitative thought process so you can don't have to live linearly. 1, 2, 3, 4. You can go 1 to 100 in an understanding. And so when something happens to them, they have no capacity to ward it off. So this article is saying if you want to live a longer life, you better deal with stress, including the stress you hide, including the stress that you hold on to from the past injustices or abuses of some kind, perceived or real, because you're just taking years off your life. And we know that smoking takes 6.6 years off your life, diabetes takes another 6.5 years off your life, and being under stress, that'll take up to about minimum of 3 years off your life, and it could take more. So there are many ways of de-stressing, and the first thing is just to exhale and realize we're all just human beings. And if you don't do something the way someone wants, or you don't do something that you expect, it's not the end of the world. It's just a way of looking at what I can do in a way to learn from what I didn't do right. We're terrified once we're successful of failing something. Have a big record, will the next record be a success? Now, I have friends who have been successful in all careers, and they all live with the fear of not being able to maintain the success, and somehow people think they're a fraud because they can't maintain it or do it again. And indeed, there are legions of agents, managers, big firms. You're only as valuable as your last hit, your last success. That pushes people into a high-stress mode. They're not creating any longer, but for the joy of it, the pleasure, the exuberance of it, their natural talents. They have to prove they can still get the paychecks. And when they can't, tell you a little story. They end up in jobs that are hard to reconcile. I got off a plane. I was picked up in San Francisco and taken around to media to do a tour of a book I had written. And about the second stop, the author says, by the way, I had a chance since I was picking up and I got a copy of the book. I've been reading your book. And he had questions. I was answering his questions, which I'm happy to do. And I said, what did you do before you became a driver? And he holds up a book. He says, I was an author. How many books? 7. Any good ones? Yeah, I had 2 bestsellers. I said, well, what happened? He said, well, my editor, who had nurtured me and helped me and green-lighted my project, she retired, and the person came in, brought their own stable in, and I couldn't find anyone to publish my work anymore. And then it became so expensive for my wife and I to live in San Francisco that we had to move clear down the coast, an hour commute each day, each way, just to be able to do this job. And the only reason I got this job is because someone from my former publishing company gave me the job, so I'm paid to go pick up people, authors, and drive them around. And I said, and how are you handling it? He said, oh, it was rough. He said, it was rough. He said, having been a person who was picked up and driven around to do media and now picking people up to drive them around to do media is like going from being a soap opera, a celebrity, to being a maitre d' in a restaurant and showing people that used to watch on television, show them to their seat for dinner. I said, well, okay. And we had a conversation of some solutions of dealing with that. But it shows you what happens when your self-esteem, your sense of self, the level of stress you have to live with is directly related to what you're trying to prove, whether it's in a relationship or work or in anything. Don't overprove, don't overachieve, don't overpush, don't overtry, because if you do, you're going to imbalance the very things in life that allow you to live in peace and harmony and appreciate and respect what you do have. You're not in a race with anyone, ever. You just think you are. Even when I'm in a race, a national world champion race, I'm never competing against the other athletes. I have too much respect for them. I'm competing against myself to see, can I be stronger and faster than I was previously? And that's why when a race stops and I finish, I come back out on that course and I cheer on all the other people. Talk to them about how they did, how they felt, etc. You create a camaraderie because you're honoring the higher ideals of the sport. Now, what if we did the same thing in all other aspects of life? There's an old Italian adage, the king and the peasant go in the same dirt. True. So de-stress and live a longer life. Don't take success seriously and don't strive for success and live a longer, happier life. Don't stress the people around you, and you'll have more people like you for who you are. And by the way, I want to put this again on the record. I've said this many times. I have a lot of new listeners. The fact that I help someone, even save someone's life, doesn't mean that I like them. I help a lot of people who are not likable. That doesn't mean they couldn't be likable, but I don't look at liking them because I'm not being their friend. I'm there to help them. And sometimes you got to help a person get through their own ego, their own narcissism, their own lack of discipline, their own living by extremely restricted way of understanding disease. Also from the University of up in Canada, published in the Journal of American College of Nutrition and the International Journal of Vitamin and Nutrition Research, they found after studying multiple studies that if you take a lot of tart cherries, now you can eat tart cherries dry, and if they've got that sugar on them, that cane sugar or syrup, just wash it off. Easy to do. Or you can buy frozen tart cherries, and that's fine. And then take that along with coenzyme Q10, and you're going to have a much more endurance in your exercise, no matter what the exercise. That's good news. And finally, from the University of St. Andrews, which is in Scotland, in an article published in the Frontiers in Psychology, this was done at the School of Psychology and Neuroscience at the university, they found that when you're really living healthy and you're happy, your skin does have a better golden glow. Yeah, it improves your skin color. And that's something, when you're eating your vegetables, you're getting more of the carotenoids, and that helps in that coloration. Carotene, orange carotene, and lycopene from tomatoes. It just gives you a more robust, healthy skin. Simple. That's the latest on health and healing. Oh, by the way, one last thing before we take a break. Remember I was talking about how we used to knock out viruses and bacteria when I was over at the Tri-State Healing Center for 15 years and at the Institute of Applied Biology for 33 years, two separate places. And we also were able to reverse HIV and full-blown AIDS with a multitude of, but vitamin C intravenous was one part of that. The Chinese were using it. Here's the latest, as of about an hour ago, from Zhen Jiantong University in China. Quote, a medical team from the second affiliated hospital of Jiantong University in China has reported the successful treatment of coronavirus patients with vitamin C. In a press release posted on the hospital website, the team describes how patients suffering from severe coronary pneumonia, a potentially fatal complication of the new coronavirus 19, have recovered after being treated with high doses of vitamin C. The medical team recommended that for critically ill patients and those with severe neonatal pneumonia, vitamin C treatment should be initiated as soon as possible after admission to the hospital. So, and they said that it's because it's a very strong antioxidant, reduces inflammation response, improves endothelial function, that's your lungs too. So how about that? And then the Shanghai Medical Association recommended high-dose vitamin C for treating coronavirus. This is a further development. The Shanghai Medical Association in China has published a consensus on the comprehensive treatment of coronavirus disease based upon the study of more than 300 clinical patients and developed by 30 experts in the treatment of new coronavirus pneumonia. It recommended high-dose vitamin C for even light infections with the virus. Does the recommended, the dose recommended is 10 to 20 milligrams per kilogram, that's 2.2 pounds of body weight per day. I would do higher than that, but then you have to be counseled by people who know about dosages. So does this mean that high-dose vitamin C therapies are on the verge of becoming mainstream? I doubt it, but at least we know there's good quality evidence that it works. And we mentioned it here on this program. And we mentioned it in that special report that Google chose to censor. And you know how close Google is to the pharmaceutical industry. Oh, I forgot. We wrote an article. Google now is a major pharmaceutical company. I see. Put the pieces together. It's very easy. So, good news. Are you all taking the advice, taking your vitamin D each day, vitamin C throughout the day? Are you taking a little jar of alcohol, a spritzer and spraying? Are you wearing latex gloves that you first put coconut oil on your hands and then you wear the gloves? Are you washing your dollar bills and putting clean dollars in one envelope and the other envelope, your second envelope, so when people give you change, you haven't put it right in there? Are you taking your own silverware so that you're not going to be infected by silverware that someone has touched? They just also said today that the coronavirus can stay in the air for a period of time. They also said from John Hopkins University and Stanford University, published an article today in the Journal of the American Medical Association, say the CDC is screwed up. Their faulty test kits for the novel coronavirus, coupled with a diagnostic strategy that initially targeted too few people. So, yeah, the CDC once again, and why are we surprised, screwed this up. Remember when I said that the Chinese were testing people with just the temperature, and that is so flawed because you could be incubating without any temperature rise? Here's a simple piece of advice, and I told my own office in New York today the same. If anyone comes to work who has a cough, fever, chills, send them home immediately. Immediately. All right? Because that person is putting everyone else at risk. And that's selfish. And so I don't care who's in charge of your office, you are in charge of your health. Don't say, well, no one told me I had the permission. No. This is where you must be proactive in a positive way. People don't like it. Tough. You've got to be strong on this. All right? And don't touch any handles with an unprotected hand. Paper towels to open doors. Yeah. So that's the latest advice. And the virus can stay on top of things for quite a while. And that's unfortunate. And then it can stay in the air for about 3 hours. But then it drops down. It lands on surfaces. That's why alcohol your phone, your keyboard, your desk, your armchairs. You get on a plane, you alcohol the seat, you alcohol the headrest, you alcohol the belt buckle, the whole belt, and then sit on a seat pad. Wear an old piece of old clothes. When you get to where your destination is, throw those old clothes in the wash with your free and clear detergent, green detergent, and throw a teaspoon of bleach in, and that'll sterilize it. Simple techniques. There's a lot more. I spent 3 hours on a webinar. You can download the webinar, which you should, by going to prn.fm. And by the way, we're posting everything now on Twitter, and Jesse's going to come on the next day and tell us how to do that. So all of our articles and photographs and videos that you see every day by over 100, we're going to have another place for you to see those. And one last thing. Did all of you read in the New York Times, because it went around all the news services, about how that they were talking about that one person who had, the first person, the only person that ever reversed HIV infection, you know? Good. Good for that person. I'm glad to see that person is no longer in harm's way. But typical of the New York Times, it's not the first. Let me just give you an idea of what we've been working on. This is the Institute of Applied Biology, a letter. Division of Cancer Research. I'm going to read it. Dear Gary, I apologize for taking so long to send you this overdue letter of acknowledgement. As you know, I have been a research scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology since 1970, but had also been conducting cancer research 5 years before then. By the way, I'm guessing this person's in their 80s. I will never forget when you first started working at the Institute. You were an idealist, and in many ways, in respects, a naive young man. You were interested in aging. Dr. Lawrence Lushan was impressed with your holistic view of life, health, and as a result secured your position. If you remember, I was one of only two full staff members who would come up to the third floor where you were always engaged in original and applied research. Over the years, I observed well over 100 original experiments you conducted. Actually, I conducted 154, but she was aware and actually oversaw 100. What captured the attention of the director and senior scientist was that you were able to extend the lifespan of rats by nearly 30% with intermittent fasting and what you called a living foods regimen. We were also impressed by food and juice menus you created for preventing and treating disease. I recall the woman suffering from terminal pancreatic cancer at the hospital across the street and associated with the Institute. She was in hospice care, and you requested to have an opportunity to help her. The hospital's leading oncologist was adamantly against the idea, but the Institute's director won out, and you were permitted to work with the patient. By the way, I knew the patient. She was my former editor at a major publishing company. And I didn't know that she was even in the hospital. I hadn't been able to reach her for months. And then I found out she was in the hospital, and then she was in hospice care. Quote, 3 months later, based upon your protocol, she was cancer-free and returned to her normal life. That was when the director requested I work with you more because of your ideas were completely revolutionary. That was around the same time when we were inundated with AIDS cases and were largely unsuccessful in treating them. One physician asked if there was anything you could do, and you offered to try. We established IV drip rooms and purchased intravenous vitamin C and other nutrients, and the staff implemented your AIDS protocol. Over the next 2 years, listen carefully, everyone. We have full documentation. You can read the letter for yourself, but the really heavy documentation follows this letter. About 10 people with advanced age reversed their HIV status and turned seronegative. All the infections disappeared, and they were HIV and AIDS free. I briefly met one of those patients recently, and she was still healthy today. I remember when I met with the director of the Institute and the Institute's board members one evening to request that these successes be made more public. They decided to remain silent because it might jeopardize their funding. This work was not based upon patentable drugs, and the advisory board said it would only draw negative attention because it was contrary to standard drug treatments. After the meeting ended, the director shrugged his shoulders and said it would not be the last time that someone accomplished something notable, and it would remain relatively unknown to the world. Shortly thereafter, you were awarded the honor of becoming an Institute Research Fellow and the youngest person to receive that honor in the Institute's history. On another occasion, you were researching your energy healing over a two-year period. One doctor told me to not communicate this with anyone else. You and several colleagues, by the way, there were multiple physicians who were on that study, including Dr. Dolores Krieger, head of nursing at New York University Nurses School, were also healers, were investigating the influence of prayer on mice with tumors and were able to reverse the cancer 6 out of 6 different occasions. We decided not to discuss it, meaning they wouldn't publish it or send it out for submission, but, quote, Dr. Stanley Krippner was aware of your work and supported it. I think the one study that got everyone's attention was actually authorized for release was your discovery that all plants contain the 8 essential amino acids, therefore animal protein consumption was unnecessary in one's diet. This meant that anyone could become a vegetarian or vegan without compromising their amino acid intake. I was also present when you presented your egg project to a packed high school. By the way, it wasn't students, it was adults, and many people in this audience were there. All told, during that two-hour period, about 2,000 people came and went. The Institute's director introduced you and was extremely proud of your accomplishments. A month later, you were appointed head of the Department of Anti-Aging Science and Medicine. I personally enjoyed the hundreds of conversations we had and with many of the unique minds that you had invited to the Institute, including Dr. Linus Pauling and Dr. George Borgstrom. There were too many to remember. You managed to turn the Institute into a creative oasis of visionary minds dedicated to saving lives, yet the world was almost ignorant of this vital environment. I'm sharing this with you now because I've had multiple strokes and my heart is giving out. However, I want to make sure that if it's my time to pass, you know the truth about what actually was happening and what we were thinking, and that the Institute's director and most of the other scientists felt the level of integrity and scientific brilliance that you honored us with for over 3 years is remembered. Best regards, Dr. Elena, Senior Scientist Research Fellow. So the entire medical industrial complex was invited on 7 occasions to come see our work. By the way, I had reversed AIDS in 8 people at the Tri-State Healing Center, 10 here, as you just heard. That's 18 people 30 years ago, and not one of 1,200 people who had AIDS, HIV infected, died. And yet, not a word. And Wikipedia continues its attacks. So what I've done is this. You can now go to prn.fm and then go to articles. Just scroll. When you go to the main homepage, go clear down and you'll see about AIDS, healing AIDS naturally. You'll see a brand new documentary. I'm going to play it on the air next week. But they're all the scientists, medical doctors, nurses, the lab reports, the actual proof, the patients. Everything is laid out as absolute, irrefutable proof of what I was doing and did. And therefore, that is what is important. Biases by people, misinformation, limited knowledge by the New York Times, the medical community. Wow. Think of how many people's lives could have been saved had they been open-minded enough and not captured fully by Burroughs Wellcome and the rest of the pharmaceutical industry and the AIDS group that were getting a lot of money for there. They're promoting drugs only. But that's history now. We're going to take a break and come right back and talk about censorship of positive information that can help people, and it's based upon their mainstream peer-reviewed scientific literature.
Sweet dreams of rhythm and dancing, sweet dreams of passion through the night, sweet dreams are taking over, sweet dreams of dancing through the night.
I'd like to welcome all of you. So what we're going to do now, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to share with you some of the other videos that Jesse and I selected that I thought you'd find of interest. This one is from Roger Waters, the famous, performer, and he's on Tucker Carlson talking about Julian Assange. Please listen in. I think you'll find this of interest.
If you would, what exactly these charges are about and why he's being charged for what sounds like the things that journalists do every day?
I can only assume that he's being charged. It's a bit like hanging a magpie on a hedge. I think he's a warning to other journalists who might not write stories, because this is, but publish stories that the powers that be do not want to be published. And so it's a way of warning off other journalists in the future and telling them, don't do this or we might lock you up in prison for 175 years, even though nothing that you have done is illegal. I mean,
so he's being, yes. So I'm just wondering, the reaction to this is surprising to me. It's broken down along political lines to some extent, though not entirely. But the New York Times, for example, has a long history, usually considered a noble history, of publishing secret government documents, most famously the Pentagon Papers in the early 1970s during Vietnam. Why haven't papers like the New York Times come to Julian Assange's defense?
Well, you would have to, you would have to ask the papers. I was wondering if you were going to ask, why hasn't the DOJ decided to prosecute the New York Times and the Manchester Guardian and the Washington Post, who all published the same information that WikiLeaks did? Why is it that they picked out Julian Assange as an example to hang in the hedge and not those other papers? It's an interesting...
Well, that is a fascinating question.
Well, thank you. There are a lot more fascinating
That one right there. So you're just to be clear, those newspapers published the information that he's facing 170 years for disseminating.
They absolutely did. And the Guardian newspaper, I have to say, two of the journalists who published the same information that Julian did on WikiLeaks actually have exposed odd names and brought people into danger because they didn't concentrate on their work and redact everything as Julian did. Julian never put anyone in any danger, and the CIA have owned up to this quite recently. So that story that was spread that he put lives in danger and so on is absolute nonsense, as are all the other smear stories that were told about Julian Assange over the last 6 or 7 years. And he was quite right to go to the Ecuadorian embassy for asylum and to not go to Sweden, because we've since learned that the Swedes would have extradited him. And there is not a hope in hell that Julian Assange would get a fair trial in the Eastern District of Washington, D.C. I mean, because... Sorry, go on.
No, I'm just wondering how you got so informed on this and so involved in it.
Well, first of all, I was just starting a large tour when the collateral murder video came out, and I included it in my tour. So I really should be, if he is guilty, so am I. I should be standing in the dock with him. They should be trying to, well, they wouldn't have to extradite me. I'm in New York City. But you know, every single night of the wall tour that I did, that went on for nearly 3 years, That video of that collateral murder, you know, of the young Americans, airmen killing those unarmed people and those two Reuters cameramen in the street. It was published in many, many other places, and quite rightly. And it has actually been of great value, I think, to all of us. I'm certain that you believe in freedom of the press and freedom of speech. And
of course,
you believe in the first. Well, I'm not sure that everybody that walks in the corridors of power does, because if they did, they would not be trying to extradite Julian Assange from London with this kangaroo court. You know, they have him locked up in a bulletproof glass cage in the highest security prison that there is in the United Kingdom, banged up for 23 hours a day in solitary confinement. And the only crime that he has been charged with and found guilty of is a minor bail infraction. It's a misdemeanor.
Yes.
It's not even what you guys would call a felony. So it's pretty bizarre.
So let me just, that leads to my final question, which is, in hanging in a lot of people's minds are the sexual assault, I think, charges that we read so much about that Assange was facing.
There weren't
Whatever
any.
Happened to those?
Were there
those...
weren't any.
Okay.
They never happened. Neither of the women involved accused him of rape. Ever. This was a concoction somewhere in between the Swedish police and the Swedish judiciary. This story was allowed to develop and to escape, and it was blown not out of all proportion. It was completely invented by mainstream media for whatever their motivations might be. All the smearing stories about Julian Assange, all the stuff about his cat and his personal habits, and it is completely made up. If you look into Niels Meltzer, who was the special rapporteur for torture from the United Nations, who interviewed Julian at some length and has released a really interesting report on all of that. Actually, I saw him doing an interview the other day where he said that he was reluctant to get involved at the beginning because he'd read all the stories and thought, the guys obviously,
right,
and
he'd
looked into it and said it's all absolute nonsense. And when he wrote his report, he tried to get it published in the New York Times and the Washington Post and the London Times and the Guardian and nobody would publish it. Not a single word of it.
Right.
There's been a blanket.
I'm not surprised.
This is why, Tucker, it's so it's not amazing. It's so great that you've got me on and that we're even being able to air the subject at all, because there is, it's almost like what in England we would call a D notice. You can't talk about it. We've made up our mind.
good for him, Roger Waters, one of the people out there telling the truth. Now, his career is going to take a hit, and he still is more concerned about injustice against Julian Assange. But it was only Tucker Carlson. He's the only person in the media that I've seen him on giving him a forum to tell the real story. Media's complicit in this. Richard Yale is back on the line now. Hi, Richard. Tell us about this very important story. Think of how many lives could be positively impacted if people just followed the advice from the mainstream scientific literature to strengthen their immune systems, not just against a virus, but against all viruses and all bacteria, and so that they would just stay healthier under normal conditions. And not a word of that came from us. Every single thing was a citation from the peer review literature from PubMed, and yet Google censored it.
Yes, I just discovered this today. I was just curious. I took our notes that we had done during the webinar and put that into an article that's available on the Progressive Radio Network site. I sent it off to everybody in our network, and it got picked up by some of the normal or our regular alternative health sites, Health Impact News, Activist Posts, and some others. But so I just want to, very often once you get something posted, it goes viral, others pick it up and post on their sites. And so I did it. This is Google search. Went into Google. I use Google quite often sometimes. I don't use it exclusively, but I usually use Google first. And it wasn't showing up anywhere except for the PRN. And when I went to another search engine, the DuckDuckGo, it was appearing in Russia, appeared in a health journal in Germany and England. None of this was found on the Google search. It was very, very limited. And I did come across, I was going to send the article to the Whole Foods magazine, which generally very often publishes some very good stuff in alternative health, and I thought maybe they would pick it up. But I found an article there. This is being promoted by Whole Foods, which, of course, is owned by Amazon. Promoting the, it's new to me, but promoting that the CDC, the federal health agencies, are suppressing and advocating against using any supplements. And so you should not be listening to anything that the alternative health community is saying about prevention and different curative supplements people could use. And apparently, here it seems like Google has been using some of its algorithms to completely block this information from appearing in their Google searches. And that's what I kind of uncovered. Not to be, it's not unexpected. We just see that we can always expect this. The federal health agencies will make every effort they can to promote their own regimen, which, as we know, is drug-based, using these HIV drugs and some of the influenza drugs that have been shown to have very serious adverse effects, such as Tamiflu.
Let's put this in proper perspective, Richard. The CDC, the FDA, the U.S. Public Health Service has not one single study on the HIV drugs, which are extraordinarily toxic, and the coronavirus. So for doctors to be prescribing off-label use, that's like someone coming in with a cold and you prescribe an antibiotic. The cold is viral and it's not based upon bacteria, so you're destroying the gut biome, making the person more vulnerable to disease and sickness. It's just our entire medical industrial complex needs to be completely reformed. It will not be with anyone running for Congress or for the presidency right now. Our whole system has been compromised and captured. And I don't believe the average person realizes the best they can do is be intelligent and consciously aware of preventing a disease. Because with the exception of emergency medicine, which we are exemplary good at helping people, we have failed terribly. If the only thing that comes from the coronavirus outbreak is empowering, it shows the weakness of our systems. We're doing nothing to prevent it on our own. We have not been using proper hygiene for decades. And we better be conscious of the spaces we're in so that we can enjoy the space without making ourselves vulnerable, and that we should have hospitals built, public hospitals, not private hospitals, in every community, large city in America that could hold all told probably upwards of 500,000 people in the whole country. So when there is an epidemic or something that will come, which likely it will, we will have a place to immediately take them that has a staff and the technology and the medications to help them. That's reasonable. And yet there won't be one of those built because of this. They'll try to convert existing places that only have moderate amount of beds. What the heck would happen if we ended up like Italy and had the whole country shut down? We're just not thinking, and we should, because there's too much politics, too much ideology involved, and not enough common sense. So I'm telling, we're writing articles. Articles that are not there to cure the coronavirus, that's not what we're doing. Information from the government that the government is not willing to even share with you. That's how captured the CDC, corrupt the CDC and the FDA are. And the people running those organizations, they come directly from big business, frequently from the pharmaceutical industries. Okay, well, I'm glad there are publications, you know, putting the articles out. And for everyone else in the audience, remember, we have a three-hour webinar. You can download it by going to prn.fm. And you can also take a look at that video that has all the documentation, all the efforts at the press where we had. I had 18 people there that I had reversed their HIV and AIDS status. The medical team was there. The scientific group was there. We spent a year on it. Everybody was invited. Not a single member came. Not a member of the gay community, the AIDS community, or the media community. No one came. Yet we were packed because the people who had AIDS, who were living a healthier life, long-lived survivors, reverse survivors, and a scientific panel, and their medical doctors. Isn't that interesting? And yet you would never know any of this. Now you will, because we've added in clips of the people at the press conference. And that 12-hour seminar I gave at a church, one of the largest churches in New York, where about 2,000 people came during a 12-hour period, where I brought in the best scientists on natural approaches to AIDS from China, from Italy, from France, from Japan. And I introduced them all day, and you'll see photographs of that. And 3 days packing the Apollo Theater, where all those African-American and minority physicians were there who had spent time at the Tri-State Healing Center learning the therapies, and Dick Gregory, who was there all the time. Dick was a good friend of mine for decades. And Bill Tatum, Isaac Hayes, Arthur Ashe, Stokely Carmichael, they were all there. Not a single mention in any paper, as if it didn't happen, but it did happen. And people who had been cured were there too, because most of them were African Americans. On a stage in front of 1,600 seated people and another 1,000 people standing there, aisles you couldn't even get through. 3 days in a row, not a single word. That's how powerful, that's how corrupt all of the American media is, especially the cesspool of New York media. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.